Hello and welcome to the EDH Rec Room, a place for some casual discussion about Commander. I'm joined, as always, by Matt Morgan. How you doing, bud?
I'm good. I had a dream last night. I was swimming in an ocean full of orange soda, and I woke up and realized it was just a fantasy.
Stop it. That's so good. You're too good at these.
You might say my dreams were crushed.
We're done. That's not really... Anyway, I'm also joined by Dana. How are you doing, man?
I'm doing good. Now, Joey, how do you know that your graveyard strategy is popular?
How, Dana? I'd love to know.
Your creatures are just dying to get in.
I appreciate that. I appreciate that very much. And you also kind of segue us into a little bit the topic that we're discussing in this rec room. We're doing just a small series about our personal favorite commander strategies, the tips that we have for those strategies or the things that make us love them as much as we do and make them our signature styles. And this time I'm up. I'm talking about graveyards and why I like them so much, because graveyards are the best. And I hope that when this is all done, Dana, as you pointed out, y'all will also be dying to get in too.
Well, so the question is, though, Joey, so why is that your favorite strategy? Like, what is it about graveyards that made you so attracted to brewing so many decks around replaying stuff from the yard?
Because graveyards are so good. So I know that's a vague description, but it's just that they're so good, man. It's such
you have a way with words, Joey.
I host a podcast, and let me tell you, good. Cards are good. These cards are good. First of all, the fact that a big graveyard, if you can pull stuff out of it, it's like you have an enormous hand, basically, because there's so much that you can play with from there. It's like you're not restricted to that 7-card hand. You've got so much more going on. Like, it's just beautiful. But honestly, that's not even the only reason. I remember a long time ago, back playing at an FNM, I played against a guy who had a Dread Return strategy, and it just knocked my socks off. He like absolutely demolished me with this card. He had Bridge from Below's in his graveyard, so when his creatures died or something to that effect, like, he would make a bunch of zombies, and then he sacrificed those zombies by flashing back a Dread Return to revive like an Akroma and then like a Flamekin Zealot or whatever from his graveyard, despite the fact that he didn't have Plains or Mountains in his deck. He was getting these cards, and I was just like, you can do that, in my 12-year-old voice. So it was more like, you can do that. Like, I was just totally wowed by how efficient all of that was, because it was like, he was cheating, but he was doing it legally. And that kind of has always stuck with me. Like, I wanted to build my own versions of that, and that totally crept into my Commander experience as well, because what I like doing is cheating, but legally. I want to just cheat stuff into play, and graveyards are one of the most hyper-efficient ways to do that. It is so much disgusting potential, and I love just paying 2 mana with an Animate Dead to get a 10-mana creature back out of the yard and making everyone else go like, that's ahead of curve. Like, it's such a power move. It's such a trip.
So do you think that was kind of your first glimpse into, like, how the game is significantly more complicated than maybe it first appears on paper?
I mean, most likely, yeah. I had certainly been kind of in the Boros or the Izzet ways before that point, I think. And I was beginning to experiment around with, like, ooh, mono black, Korlash Heir to Blackblade deck. But then I saw that type of strategy, and I was just like, there's so much more happening here that isn't just a combat step, and I need to visit that part of the game. It turned me to the dark side, absolutely. The complexity drew me in. It's the dark side seduced me.
Well, and looking at your decks, Joey, it's not just like you're doing graveyard things, because when you look at your actual decks, that gets really vague and unspecific, because A, you have so many graveyard decks, but also... True. They're doing fairly different things. Like, you have Marin that is recurring these engines and making sure that you're getting these massive threats, usually for cheapest free. But then, like, you have your Conrad deck, which does not do that at all. Like, it's cranking through so many graveyard triggers. And then your Mimeoplasm deck that I still don't enjoy seeing ever. That's just like, what is the most silly thing I can reanimate, and how fast can I do it? So, like, it's just crazy how many different things you're doing. So, like, you say graveyard decks, but that's not specific at all.
No, that's totally true. That's another thing that I like about it so much. And what I think might be, I'm going to dispel a misconception about graveyard decks, is that, like, that is a big umbrella term for a lot of different nuance happening within that strategy. Like you just mentioned, each of those decks, like to someone, it might seem like that's kind of redundant, Joe. Like, isn't that kind of the same strategy over and over? And it really doesn't feel like it because there's so much surprising versatility going on with graveyards. It's kind of like a color wheel. Like, these strategies are all the color blue, but they have those gradients between them from sky blue to navy to cerulean. Like, the way Marin revives things is different than the way that Conrad does, and the way Marin fills the graveyard is different than the way Conrad does. Something like, you know, Muldrotha will win a long battle of attrition by inexorably getting stuff back from the grave over and over and over, whereas Mimeoplasm is going to revive things way ahead of curve and demoralize opponents right from the get-go. So, like, the tempo of those games is completely different. Or, so some graveyard commanders will want a bunch of tiny creatures, but others only need one big baddie. You know, Mimeoplasm, he don't need help. He just wants to become a copy of, like, a walking ballista or an evasive infect creature with a bazillion +1/+1 counters on it from a Lord of Extinction and just crush the whole battlefield. I can build an entire deck that is just built around abusing my graveyard, like my lovely Marin of Clan Nel'Thoth. But then I can also build one that is built around abusing cards in your graveyard. And Mimeoplasm does that really efficiently. If I find that you've got something tasty in your graveyard over there, I've intentionally filled your graveyard to help me out with that. And then Conrad can play around more with ripping stuff out of my graveyard too, but then also filling enemy graveyards. Like, there's a whole bunch of extra different expressions that you can do during gameplay. And like, that goes down to other small things too. Like, I might have a plan on the fly. I'm planning to animate dead one of my biggest creatures because I know it's going to be awesome, but maybe you'll get a bigger one that I'm more interested in. And that sounds really great. Or a really fun sort of juggling act is measuring how much value my opponents will get off of my living death spell that brings everyone's graveyards back into play.
Well, and to kind of visualize that, like, if Magic is, you know, a house, you then discovered graveyards as kind of this unexplored wing of the house where you wanted to go play. And then once you were playing there, you're like, oh, there's a cool sub basement on this wing, and there's this cool other room I didn't know about. So, like, you've then moved beyond that. You found this cool space you could play in, and now you're trying to see, like, what other weird offshoots of that space are there you can play in.
Yes, but the house is a necropolis.
Right, okay, yeah. Definitely gothic and spooky.
Indeed.
So, Joey, it seems like there's almost archetypes within graveyard decks. Do you mm-hmm. feel the need to, like, differentiate? So, like, you say my Marin is a graveyard deck, or do you think Aristocrats maybe can, like, gets a different message across? I guess my question is, like, are there different archetypes within just the graveyard theme, as it were?
Yeah, I would totally say so. Aristocrats built all around sacrificing your own stuff for value. Like, my Marin deck is simultaneously a reanimator deck, but also I'm going to Zulaport Cutthroat everyone to death by just sacrificing all of my many, many creatures. Because Matt, I know that you love a combat step, but I don't like doing math during a combat step. It's just so much easier if everyone just loses a bunch of life at the same time with a Zulaport Cutthroat. It just makes my life so much easier. But then, you know, you compare that to Mimeoplasm, and that is just a straight up reanimator deck for sure. Which doesn't have much of those different delineations about sacrificing my own creatures for value nearly as often. And so you definitely can't get those different gradients between them, but it is a very, like, I don't know. This probably sounds a little pompous, and I'm sorry, but, like, you do have to build very carefully around that. And when it is being played so, and it looks so broken, like, a lot of the actual I don't want to say skill, but, like, a lot of the care of a lot of the planning for that maybe went into the deck building, because when you're building something like a reanimator deck, there are so many different moving pieces to each of those. You know, I know that we're probably all a little bit used to Muldrotha just being able to just shovel value out of a graveyard just by dint of its stuff dying, and it doesn't have to do a whole lot. But at the same time, there's a lot of extra care that's going into what stuff they have planned to get back. And in Reanimator specifically, like, if you draw all of your big 7, 8, and 9 drops in your opening hand, the game's not going to go well for you. You have to balance that out against the cards that will enable you to have a good amount of ramp to actually be in the game, along with card advantage while you're killing off your own stuff to keep you in the game there too. Not to mention ways that you can fill your own graveyard to then get those reanimation spells to pull everything back out. I totally have opening hands where it's like, here's my animate dead, here's my other reanimation spells, but I don't have a way to get the creatures into my graveyard that are worth reanimating. Or vice versa, I don't draw a single reanimation spell, it's just a bunch of simple creatures, and then it feels like I'm playing a game on normal mode instead of playing it as broken as I want to. So a lot of those different categories you have to pay very careful attention to just within the deck building process, so that the deck can behave as brokenly as it should during gameplay.
Well, and it's funny too that you say you don't like the combat step because that math is too hard. I have a Taste of Karloff deck and I try to do some of these things you're talking about, and I've sat there like an absolute dork trying to math out how Zulaport Cutthroat works. So it's just funny that like the attention to detail that you have towards the graveyard decks is, I can respect it because it's online with how I feel about the combat step, where it just feels natural. So it definitely takes a different muscle compared to a lot of other decks that people might be used to playing if you haven't played graveyard decks or aristocrat style decks before.
Yeah, you definitely do learn to sort of internalize some of those different lines. Like when I get a Buried Alive or an Entomb, these are the things I know I'm getting. When I have my Fauna Shaman, these are the things I'm pretty sure that I'll want in any given scenario. You do sort of, through repetition, you do find all of those different lessons for sure, to make all of those things a lot easier on yourself.
Well, we talked a little bit when we did this show with Matt about how, you know, I can kind of see a reflection in his playstyle, in his personality. Like I can see how those two things kind of reflect one another. Is there something you think in dabbling in this graveyard space that you think reflects you a little bit, Joey?
I think the resilience of it is what I enjoy so much, maybe.
Okay.
Because I don't want to focus on the fact that I said I like cheating, but legally. I do love cheating. Like, I also have a Yennet deck, which isn't Reanimator, but it is also cheating things into play, and it makes me really happy. I get broken giggles about it. But the fact that anything that an enemy does, if they're wiping your board, if they're killing your creatures, every strike against you is just another thing that adds to your own benefit, because you want those things in your graveyard in the first place. There is so much resilience that you get from that type of strategy, where even when your opponents are one-upping you and getting rid of your board state, that actually plays right into your hand. That just absolutely, I think, really appeals to me, having that idea of resiliency of spirit or of zombie.
Well, yeah, I mean, I was also kind of wondering as well if, because particularly early in Magic's history, the graveyard was very much a place where cards went to never return from, for the most part. Like, there, you just didn't play out of your graveyard aside from the occasional spell that could recur something. I wondered if kind of the almost rule-breaking aspect of it, like you're finding a way to play the game in a way that originally wasn't intended. I wonder if that was at all appealing to you.
Are you just calling me a rascal? Are you just calling me a rule breaker?
Maybe, but like, I can see how, like, it's not my thing, but I can see how that would provide you with, provide someone with a sense of joy about it, like finding a way to go against what was intended and kind of fighting against those constraints.
I think that's a compliment, so I'm going to take it. There's one other a special lesson, I guess, about like the graveyard strategy that I also really want to, you know, as long as we're talking about like tips or things learned through playing the graveyard, but like graveyard hate, looks pointedly at Dana, is really like, it's all over the place. Also looks pointedly at Matt. Just like I think on our stream, like I've played against, I want to say that there were 13 different graveyard exile effects that I encountered in the course of a single game, which just felt like overkill. That was really bad. So like, this is totally, it has the capacity to be such a glass cannon strategy for sure, because a single Bajuka Bog is just like, ah, dang, there went all of my hard work. A Rest in Peace is like, I just make grumbling noises when that card happens, because it's just like all my hard work then and now is completely just out the window. There's almost nothing I can do. I gotta get back into it. But like, that also kind of appeals to me, because yes, you can build your deck to have answers to those things, but also at the same time, that kind of eats into all of the other categories in your deck that you kind of need to flesh out as well. So if you devote too many cards to the answers to the thing that would wreck your strategy, you kind of may accidentally wreck your own strategy, because you won't draw the cards that make the strategy good if you're drawing just too many things that would help keep your graveyard preserved. And that's another thing that you kind of have to keep in mind. Sometimes you just, if they've got the hate, you have to play into it. And if they don't have that answer, then you're going to be good, but you got to make them have it.
Yeah, that's definitely the weird push-pull with those decks is if somebody doesn't have a way to interact with the graveyard, you are just going to roll over them. And if people do have answers, you are kind of unable to do very much.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the game with the 13, never mind. I actually don't remember all how that went, but yeah.
Oh, I do, because I was the one that was fielding most of it, and it took you and Sed from One More Mana several attempts to get rid of one scavenging ooze, and that little boy, he just
did work.
He was hungry. He was just trying to find something to put together. But I do appreciate, Joey, that like the graveyard decks, especially that you build, even with all of those grave hate effects that were played by the table, you still found ways to navigate. And I guess this is the one thing that maybe I can't comprehend the same way. Dana's Sphinx control deck, I just can't grok necessarily. But just the way that you're able to, in the face of grave hate, finding ways to time everything. Like you talked about the nuances and okay, you have to make sure you're taking into consideration your payoffs, your setups, you know, how are you going to navigate? And then just like your vegetable cards, your ramp, everything. There's a lot that goes into the deck building process and that carries over into the gameplay. Every time that I see you playing any of these many graveyard decks you have, the wheels are constantly turning. You don't get a turn off to kind of, okay, I can make this decision later. Like you have to be making very important decisions literally every single turn.
Yeah, Matt, I hope that you don't give up on the Taysa, on all of the graveyard stuff. I hope that you you know, stick with it more because it is just very enchanting. But I will also say, like, it takes a whole lot of repetition to really feel as comfortable with those different lines, I would say. Listeners, my deck lists are going to be in the description for this episode. And in those deck lists, I do have some of them like categorized out in pretty strict ways, I think. And those categories I find are really helpful when I'm looking through other folks' decks to see how it is that they intend to play those. And so maybe that will also be useful too, is like figuring out how it is that you categorize each of those and having those different categories that are very strict and not too broad can help make those different lines of play a bit easier, not just in the deck building process, but also like when it is being expressed in gameplay as well. So look for those in the description, and hopefully those tricks will be helpful for you and that you'll join. Matt, I just want you to join the grave. It's so good. The strategy is so good, guys. I keep trying to tell you, but you keep on exiling my stuff instead.
I told you I have a Taysa deck. I just don't trust it.
Well, and I'm also trying to not read too much into the fact that if you actually look up the Schultz family crest, it's just two crossed shovels over an open coffin.
There it is.
I have no comment.